Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Thursday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio as we get the business lunch underway. Dennis Rodkin will be along a little bit later in the program. Bill Geiger as well to talk retirement. But let's start with the federal shutdown and the 800,000 workers we've been talking about who have been furloughed. I don't know the number of government contractors, but it certainly grows from 800,000. A number of businesses have been stepping up to help. You know, we started talking last week about the banks helping with late payments and things like that. Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, the phone companies are helping to maintain service as well. George Washington University in Washington, right, where I think 16% of the employees are federal workers, are offering free basketball tickets. I don't know if you'd want to see George Washington play basketball, but you can do that. On a phone line is Ben Bright, who's with public affairs at Airbnb. Airbnb, the latest to step up and offer some assistance. It's interesting to me because, in a way, Airbnb got started because of a government, or at least a crisis in this country. Ben, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me about that and how the origin of Airbnb and the housing crisis from about 10 years ago started you guys and why that brings you now to the table today.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Founded in 2008 in the wake of the recession, our founders, who are doing much better these days, but back then they were a couple broke, kids in San Francisco, and they were really struggling to pay their rent in a very expensive city, obviously. So there was a big conference coming to town, a big design conference that was selling out all the hotels, and they had this idea. Well, you know, more people are coming in; they don't have places to stay. What if we throw out a few air mattresses? We'll feed them cereal in the morning, and we'll call it Air Bed and Breakfast, and maybe this will help us, you know, pay our rent for one more month while we try to figure out how we're going to, you know, stay here long term. So that's how the company started. It's a little bigger now. Those are our origins, started in the wake of the Great Recession.
And so what percentage of Airbnb hosts today do it, I mean, just to stay in their house?
Yeah, so the overwhelming majority of our hosts, both in Chicago and throughout the country, you know, they're sharing their primary residence. As we survey our hosts, we really vary state to state. Generally, it's not the majority, but a good amount. Yeah, they're saying, you know, we use this to pay our mortgage. We use this to be able to pay our rent, to be able to stay in our home, and that percentage actually goes up considerably when you look at the most expensive cities, the Chicago's, the San Francisco's, the Washington, D.C.'s, New York's of the world, where, you know, you got a lot of folks living paycheck to paycheck. It is very expensive, so they're taking advantage of that extra space.
All right, so Ben, what is Airbnb doing then? I would imagine you're extending an offer to the people who already, to the federal workers who already work as hosts for you, correct?
Yeah, and we've been seeing, a couple of news clips popping up of, you know, federal, you know, these poor folks, they're going without paychecks. A lot of them are turning to hosting, just like our founders did, you know, back in 2008 to make ends meet while they're not getting a paycheck. Beyond that, we have, thousands of federal workers who already are hosting, you know, just on the side, just a good way to pay the bills. So we recognize that, you know, here was a good opportunity. You know, no matter what your political persuasion is, no matter how you feel about the shutdown itself, everyone has sympathy for these people who are now, you know, perhaps struggling to put food on the table. So we're launching this program called A Night on Us, and what it's going to do for any federal worker who is hosting, who is sharing their home through Airbnb, already hosting or sharing their home, we're going to pay for a night out of our own pockets, up to $110, which is the average amount that a host in the United States makes per night through Airbnb. So that's coming out of our own pocket to, you know, just a little bit that we can do to help them get through this tough
situation.
That's
great. And so it goes through March, and let's hope that the government is back up and running by the time this window closes. We don't want you to have to extend the window, Ben.
Yeah, I think we all feel that way.
Listen, thanks for doing that. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. Wish you the best of luck.
Likewise. Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Thursday afternoon. Bill Geiger is here as well. Our conversation with Bill Geiger, sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Have you ever been to a Thursday afternoon? I don't know.
Thursday.
Welcome back.
Like, okay. Thursday.
So I was reading earlier this week that the stock markets, and this just shows how you pick your window, right?
Yeah.
The stock markets are off to their fastest start of the year since, I think, was it 2003, 2008, something like that. Anyway, fast start. Things are looking up. That's if you start on January 1st or maybe on December 28th or so.
Right.
But if you go back another month or 6 weeks, it's been a pretty rough run.
Pretty rough run. It's bounced back. The markets have bounced back some from that big drubbing that we took in the fourth quarter. I think it's a pause. That's my feeling. I think when Congress really gets into these 87 investigations that they've announced and the impeachment hearings that they announced, whether you're a Trump fan or not, markets hate uncertainty. We talked about this before. Steve, I think this is just a phenomenal time for people to get their portfolio straightened out.
I know there are a lot of people who want impeachment hearings. I don't think they've got anything scheduled just yet. They're whispering or talking about it. Well, so I'm just wondering, though, because it was so bad in December,
right?
Because it's a little better in January, do people think, hey, we got a little gains here. We better, this is the time to take some action.
The folks that are coming into the office that we're seeing feel a relief
right?
that it hasn't continued to go straight down, and they're using what they're considering a pause as an opportunity to get their portfolio in a position where they're not going to have a big loss, and also to start rebalancing their portfolio,
right,
to start creating income.
What are the risks for people? We're talking about what, people in their mid to late 50s, 60s, right?
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s.
So what's the risk for people in a market like this?
The big risk is loss of principal. That's a fancy way of saying you lose your butt, you know?
Right.
You're this
close. Well, that's
close.
What I'm thinking. So they got a little cheek back this year,
yeah.
So that's why they're probably motivated to come and see
you. Yeah, and because in the last few days of December were just horrible, you know, and you've got folks, and we're talking to them all the time, that come in the office and say, look, you know, my eyes are wide open, and I can't tolerate a really big loss
mm-hmm.
this close to retirement. We're sitting down with a couple yesterday, and you'll find this story interesting. They had a over $1 million portfolio there at a big trust company in Chicago, and they had a portfolio that on the cover page it said that they had a balanced return portfolio. That
Which
sounds
is safe,
kinda,
right?
That
That's
sounds
where you want to be.
Yeah. Kind of good, right? Balanced,
right.
Good feeling.
You don't want to be imbalanced?
No. We ran this through our institutional version of Morningstar. And Morningstar, not us, Morningstar says the next 2008 we go through, they're going to lose 48% of their portfolio. And this is something that this trust company called a balanced return portfolio. And it's just, these folks were upset.
How do you protect your principal from surviving another 2008?
Well, you rebalance things. You reallocate things. You take some money off of the hard growth and you put it into income strategies that are going to protect your principal. I mean, the two big deals getting close to retirement is, one, protect your principal, don't have a big loss. And two, start building an income strategy that's going to provide dependable, sustainable income for you that you're going to need when your paycheck stops.
What do people, when they come in to see you, how does this all get started? Or what's the one thing really that they have to get right?
The one thing they have to get right is they have to understand just how much risk they have and the importance of an income strategy. Steve, it's been a while since we've done this.
It has.
It's been since December. Why don't we do something special for folks? First five callers who call in with at least $500,000 in their portfolio, we're going to sit down with them personally, complimentary basis, and put together a full-blown plan for them for retirement and help them do exactly what we were just talking about. Help folks get their risk down to an acceptable level and understand what it is, first of all. And the second is to start putting together an income strategy.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Good to be back, sir.
We'll be right back. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and a big fat thank you to them for that. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business, and comes by when he's got an opening in his schedule. Welcome back.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I haven't seen you in forever.
Yeah, the holidays, you right. were off. I worked the whole time. I don't know what your problem is.
You know, the only day I worked on the holidays was New Year's Day.
Oh, really?
How weird is that? And I'm going to work more next time because it's a dead time.
It is.
You have a piece about million-dollar home sales in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And they increased year over year.
Right.
But they didn't increase as fast.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by, in particular, one of the reasons you cite. Generally, we can talk, taxes, uncertainty, things like that, right? But the other, go ahead, I guess I should let you answer my question.
That's part of it. So sales of million-dollar and up homes were up nearly 10% in 2017 from the year before. In 2018, they were up 1.4%, about one-seventh the rate of growth the year before. So it's not that market has stopped, but it has slowed its growth, and that's the lowest growth. We've been making that chart with REMAX Preferred Properties together for 4 years, and this is 2018 was the smallest growth in that sector of the market.
And was it in this story that one of the reasons for that is that because people are now attracted to really high-end apartments?
Yeah, well, the really high-end apartments, which are going up all around outside these windows we're sitting in, there are a couple of reasons people would do that. One, they're available now, right? Rather than a new condo I'm going to buy and get a little bit later. They're packed with amenities. And one of the things people keep talking to me about is this idea that if I'm a high-income person and I move into one of these rentals, I get, you know, the cafe, the really nice gym, the social spaces. I may not spend a lot of time in my apartment, but spend a lot of time in the social spaces, in the amenities, whereas in my condo buildings aren't built with, though they're built with amenities, they're not built with the same level of amenities.
So the condos are seen as more individual pods, where the apartment is more of a whole. Apartment building is more of a whole.
Right. But there is another reason that these high-end people are going to apartments, according to the real estate agents I spoke to, and that is that unless you're going to own a property in the Chicago area for several years, you can't expect much appreciation. You and I have talked about that again and again and again. So people are saying, well, you know, I've transferred to Chicago. I might only be here 3 years. Or I've downsized out of a big house. I don't know if I'm headed full-time to Florida or what. So rather than buy, I'll rent because there are these very attractive rentals. And then I don't stand to lose money.
About one in five high-end sellers last year bought another home in the Chicago area.
According to one agent. According to just that one agent.
Okay, so that's his or her experience.
Right.
But that would mean 80% are moving out of the area.
They either took a rental or they moved out of the area. Yeah, and she said in many cases they were moving because of taxes. They moved to a lower tax state from here. I think you and I have talked about how there's this sort of feeling that the high-end buyer these days, if they're, let's just say they're spending $100, they used to spend, say, 50 here and 50 in Palm Beach or Florida, and now they might spend 80 in Florida and 20 here because they're going to get more performance out of the money down there.
Okay, you also wrote about this company, and I'm not going to hold it against the company, but it's called it's called Renovation Sells, right?
Right.
And this is a company you can hire, and they'll do a little sprucing up. It's not like staging. They'll do some actual construction to make your house more sellable. The headline is, you know those cherry cabinets have to go, so your home will sell, right? This firm handles that. And then in the store, you've got a picture of cherry cabinets, right?
Several pictures of cherry cabinets.
I have those cherry cabinets. Not only that, I have the same poles that you have.
I know you do.
On the ones. And so, wait, I'm going to go.
So, Steve, you don't have to hold it against the firm. I wrote the headline and I chose the pictures. So, it's me you should hold that against.
Then you got this realtor. I'm not going to name him, but I'm sure he's a great guy. But the quote is, these cherry cabinets that were ubiquitous 15 years ago look horrifying and orange to the 2019 buyer.
He was looking in your kitchen window when he said that to me. Yeah.
I had no idea that cherry was now so verboten.
Well, that is, of course, if you want it to sell at a great price and quickly.
So really, what is it now? It's just white cabinets or it's...
Generally, and that's not necessarily what people want in their home. It's what they're looking at on the internet. because it's neutral.
I see.
Cherry cabinets. I'm clicking through photos of houses for sale on the internet. I see the cherry cabinets. I think, I'm going to have to do a lot of work. I don't like cherry cabinets. I'm going to have to put in a whole new kitchen. I see white cabinets, in many cases, just sprayed white over the cherry.
And those white cabinets might be doctored pictures anyway to make the...
There is virtual staging, yeah. Though, in this case, in this company's case, they're actually painting them for you. I see those, and it's just not an obstacle for me the way the cherry cabinets are. I think, white, I can live with that until I do what I want. It's what they're essentially trying to do is make things look more palatable, both, we called it curb appeal and blurb appeal, right? When I'm looking at it from the sidewalk or walk in, it should look good. But also when I'm looking at it on the internet, it just shouldn't stop me. And cherry cabinets are one of the things these days that stop buyers.
And what a remarkable time we're living in. You know, it's changed where you don't drive by the house anymore. You cyber through it.
Yeah.
And that's changing now the way we decorate our homes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instagram worthy, right? That's a big part of selling a house.
Yeah,
now.
Making a house Instagram worthy, making it look really good online. That's really so, and that's part of this cherry cabinet issue. Is if I'm say 50 years old and I have had those cabinets for 15 years, it may not be an obstacle to me. But if I'm 25, 30, 35 years old and buying my first home, I don't want cherry cabinets. I want something contemporary.
Selling my house, but I want something. I'm going to go paint my damn cabinets this weekend now.
Well, but the problem is, but you're not trying to sell it right now.
I want to be hip.
Well, there's a lot involved there, Steve. But speaking of your kitchen, if you're going to sell 5 years from now, maybe wait. What we might be seeing on the internet then is, I don't know, silver, black, brown cabinets.
That's Dennis Rodkin. He writes about real estate for Cranes. We're going to take a break and come back and visit a property that we spent a lot of time at. But right now, this from Bennett Wakenight.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. All right, this first one's for all of those who love the lunch rush. I'm a breakfast guy myself, but to each their own. Anyway, Cousins Sub Shop is looking to do a lot of real estate shopping downtown in the Loop, and they said they plan on adding nearly 40 locations to the area in the next 6 years. Woohoo, that's ambitious. The chain shop only currently has 90 locations in the whole state of Wisconsin where it's headquarters. I mean, if you're gonna make your presence known in another market, why not make it known? We'll see how things move along as they begin their plan of sub-sandwich shop domination. And last week, I mentioned that Cars.com decided to lay off 126 employees, roughly 8% of its workforce. And it looks like it was to trim the fat before putting itself up for sale. They've announced they're open to a buyout of the website after the board has been concerned about their stock performance. But the official statement said that they've not set a timetable for the sale or reviewing strategic alternatives. Sounds like there might be a bigger plan in the works. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, Oya, and Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I love when Dennis Rodkin comes by because we can talk about the bigger stories, the real estate issues in the area, but then we can talk about the bad neighbors. So you've got this story about, and this isn't about bad neighbors really, the Bertrand Goldberg, the River City building, right? And we've talked about this building a lot because this was an example of what was a condo, and it was purchased by a developer, and they're going to flip it and make it apartments, right?
Right.
Historic building, but not historically landmarked.
Yeah, only built in the 1980s. It doesn't have landmark protection. It's been through a lot. It began, actually opened as apartments, went condo, and now is going back to apartments. And it took 2 years for the developers to get the board. It's 440-something units, and they had to get everybody on board. So it took quite a while.
We know the building, right? The building looks like the Bertrand Goldberg developed Marina Towers,
right.
Prentice Hospital. So
right.
It's a sort of a honeycomb building down there.
Yeah.
I did not know until I read your story that he was a brutalist, which stands for something French, but it basically means bare concrete.
There are other theories out there. I've been getting tweeted at by people who say,
you have.
Oh, the word came from a million other things. But essentially, brutalism is the buildings. I mean, they have sort of spaceship looks and very 70s sort of organic kind of crazy looks, but primarily brutalism refers to the fact that people were using bare concrete in French. Brute would fit right in there.
Go ahead and give me the conjunction of brute. Give me the whole. I want you to speak in French for me.
May know.
That's good. So we got these developers come in. They buy everything up. They're going to spruce it up to make it an attractive rental. They're painting over the concrete.
They're painting the interior. Yeah. So the building, Goldberg designed it to have this sort of flowing, fluid, curving.
But that'd be like painting a face on the Picasso, wouldn't it?
That is what some of the people there say. But there are other people who say, well, yeah, it's bare concrete. Why wouldn't you paint it? It has definitely upset people. The painting started yesterday in the morning, and by lunchtime, residents were sending me photos. This is common areas. This is not, of course, inside the apartments. But there's a lot of common area in this building because it had this sort of, it was supposed to feel like a street in Paris, a very modern view of a street. You're looking up 10 stories of concrete bridges and that sort of thing in this atrium. And there are people who called it, there was a resident who called it vandalism. Yeah. There was an architecture critic I quoted in the story who said, it's a shame.
I took a group to London in October, right? Uh-huh. We visited St. Paul's. This reminds me of St. Paul's in a way, designed by Christopher Wren.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a minimalist sort of cathedral. I think half of it still is. The other half is a little more gaudily decorated because Queen Victoria didn't like Christopher Wren's style.
Oh.
I don't know who the Queen Victoria is in this story, but that's kind of the same sort of thing where the new owners or the new proprietors are creating their own vision, and the traditionalists are just aghast.
And the traditionalists are aghast. What's interesting is this bare concrete concept, or painting over the bare concrete, actually has sort of a precedent. There's another brutalist design by a Chicago architect. It's the Washington, D.C. subway by Harry Weiss, where they were painting a station white. They're painting over this beautiful barrel of a tunnel, painting it white a couple of years ago, and people went nuts in Washington. Now we've got the same thing happening here.
In the time, we got about a minute left, but take me to Glencoe, where a property, the Hoover Estate, Hoover Vacuums, sold for $10 million. You drive down Green Bay Road, you can't really see it.
Right, you see the gate.
But they're going to pave Paradise and put up a suburban lot?
A couple of dozen houses, it appears. I don't yet have details on what they're going to put up. They just bought it right at the very, very end of 2018, and I haven't yet been able to speak to the buyers or identify them, but I was told by their agent
you'll find them.
I'm gonna try.
Yeah.
It's about 12 acres, and they expect to put up a couple of dozen houses, probably oriented toward baby boomers who are downsizing, and probably take down that mansion that Mr. Hoover built. That mansion is about 85 years old, but will have had one owner.
Wow.
And be torn down.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful Tudor mansion. There's pictures of it at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by, Dennis.
Thanks, Steve.